This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Plato.
I'm Bill Nye, co-hosting today's Sci-Fry.
Bill Nye is here. He's one of the most famous people on the planet. He's America's engineer. And I know, Bill, that one of the most fascinating aspects of our bodies that we like to talk about on this show is the human biome. That's that enormous population of bacteria and viruses that inhabit our guts. And the warfare sometimes between the two. All around us on our skin, even inside of our guts, there's a battle between bacteria and their mortal enemies, viruses, known as bacteriophages or bacteria eaters or phages, if you want to have a shortcut. And each phage prefers to dine on a certain type of bacteria. And my next guest reasoned, why not find phages that like to attack sickness-causing strains of E. coli? You know, the strains you hear about lurking in burger meat and salad mix, and then use these viral E. coli killers to make our food safer. What? Just spray them on the spinach leaves, kill off any of those nasty bugs that might be living there, and guess what? It works. Wiping out over 99% of E. coli planted on the spinach leaves in tests. Paul Ebner is Associate Professor of Animal Sciences at Purdue in West Lafayette, Indiana. He published his research in the Journal of Animal Science. He joins us from WBAA today. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Ebner.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Wait, is there a difference between a phage and a virus, or are they identical?
Phages are a class of viruses. They're different than, you know, what you'd normally think of when you hear viruses. You think of illnesses. These are viruses that attack bacteria specifically.
How did you find the right phage that would attack these E. coli that you wanted to do?
That's a good question. And we used probably a primitive source of crowdsourcing, where we go to wastewater treatment plants. And we isolate the phage based on the types of bacteria that we're looking to target.
So you take them out of the sewage?
Yeah, you can. Well, that's one place you can go. that's where we go. We have pretty good luck with wastewater. Other groups that are working in this area, they might go to, livestock manure, things of that nature, ponds,
so
things like that.
How do you determine which one's killing which bacterium?
Well, it's kind of like fishing. We take the bacteria that we want to target. So in this case, it was E. coli 157. And we get the wastewater sample, and it might be influent, it might be some other sample. And
is 157 one that's notorious that we would have heard of?
Yeah, that's one that I'm sure you've heard about. It's notorious. It's because it produces one or two toxins depending on the strain, and those can be very, very damaging in infections.
And so you actually sprayed the phages on salad and meat that you had infected with the E. coli?
Yeah, that's what we do. We experimentally contaminate, in this case it was ground beef and then spinach, and then we apply the phages directly to those products, and then at different temperatures.
I was going to say at room temperature, right, where it's 37 Celsius or something.
Yeah, we did do room temperature, and in that case, with spinach, that would maybe mimic what might happen if, you know, refrigeration goes bad. With ground beef, we also did it with undercooked patties and also room temperature and refrigerated temperature.
Yeah, I said 37, that was human body, but you're talking about 22 or 20, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you got 99% killing.
So along that line, what makes these things so specific? This is to say, what evolutionary process? My understanding is that only certain phages attack certain bacteria with just extraordinary, a limited range of attack, if I may.
Right, and it's based on receptor recognition. And, people talk a lot about the specificity of phages. One of the things we're looking at is trying to find some that are a little bit more broad spectrum.
Now, of course, if you do that, you might be attacking the good guys in our tummies.
Yeah, and that's a big question that we have and something we're also looking at. But we like something a little bit more broad spectrum because a lot of times you don't have diagnostic information of what's in the food or what's in the animal. When we started, we worked primarily with live animals and trying to limit transmission in different livestock species. But you don't always know, you know, what exactly is there. So, you know, by broad spectrum, we're not talking about broad spectrum in terms of like antibiotic or broad spectrum antibiotics, but something that targets, you know, several different serovars or types of salmonella.
So my understanding. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just wondering if you think this can be commercially viable now. Where does it go from here? Can you, and will people want to eat meat or salad that's been sprayed with viruses?
Yeah, great questions. There are actually a couple products that are commercially available, and they're used as food processing aids, and they target Listeria or E. coli, other bacteria. And that's just in the United States. In other countries, phage therapy has a long, long history, especially in Eastern Europe, where there are several products that are even over-the-counter medications for things like dysentery.
Mm-hmm. So there are a million phages in a milliliter of seawater?
Pardon me?
I read that there are a million phages, individuals, mm-hmm. in a milliliter of seawater.
That would sound pretty accurate.
Yeah, that seems like a lot. So,
I think the total number in the world is 10 to the 30 or 10 to the 32.
Oh, so. Man.
My goodness.
It seems like there's not a shortage.
And so they're on you. So if you just lick your lips, you're taking in 1,000 phages.
Yeah. So yeah, let me ask you this, though. How is it that these things have managed to survive? Let's see. How is it that bacteria haven't come up with ways to completely fight phages and phages haven't come up with ways to completely destroy all bacteria? I guess it's the Red Queen. It's an evolutionary race. Huh?
And they do. And bacteria can develop ways to overcome infection or to block infection. And that's one thing that we're looking at. We look at it, though. Thus far, it's been kind of difficult to actually quantify how important that is because we're doing a lot in the lab. Now, you know, we have all these advanced DNA sequencing technologies available to us, and we'll actually get a better handle on, you know, what's actually happening, not just with one E. coli versus one phage in the lab, but all the E. coli and all the other bacteria in the gut or whatever microbiome you're looking at and see actually what's happening a lot better.
Mm-hmm. So with that said, you still, the consumer is trusting you to spray the spinach with the right cocktail of phages, right?
Sure, sure.
And then, I don't know if it makes any difference, do you rinse the spinach afterwards? Is that even a factor? You eat some phages, love the phages, but would you take off a few more of the non-killed bacteria by rinsing?
That would probably depend on the product and how the bacterium interacts with the different food matrix.
How do we know that the phages are not going to morph or mutate into something that's going to attack our whole gut, all the bacteria in our guts, even the good stuff?
Right, and that's a really good question, and that's something that we are looking at. And like I said, if now we have all these technologies that are available to us, they weren't even there maybe around 10 years ago, but cost prohibitive. And looking at, you know, you spend years, you know, developing your gut microbiota, and we don't want to use some product that's going to mess that up. That was a lot of hard work. And so that's one thing that we're going to be looking at in the future.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we keep talking about antibiotic-resistant diseases that are coming out now. That we only have, you know, for like MRSA, things like that. Phage therapy was around way before there were the miracle drugs, right?
Right, exactly.
Can we bring them back again to attack these antibiotic resistance drugs again? Because it seems like you could find a phage for any one of these bacteria.
Antibiotic resistant bacteria.
Bacteria, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And there's actually a lot of work going on that in that field. And that's kind of how we got into this this field ourselves, because I'm an animal scientist and we work with livestock species. So there's a lot of energy going in to try and find alternatives to antibiotics. But there are several groups that are looking more at therapies for human medicine and targeting specifically, you know, MRSA and other, you know, notorious antibiotic-resistant bacteria.
Mm-hmm. What about creating a designer phage from scratch? We can now put DNA together and all that kind of stuff synthetically. Could you not do one with a phage?
Anything's possible. And they are very simple organisms. They're double-stranded DNA viruses.
Pretty it's a piece easy of to cake. Manipulate.
Yeah. Well, it is.
It's an engineering problem.
Well, if you look at phage history in the United States, at least, once antibiotic era began, there's still a lot of phage research, but it was relegated to, you know, using them as reagents for genetics and then eventually molecular biology. So there's a lot of information about some very specific phages.
Mm. And so where do you go from here with this research?
We are probably going to go back to working more with live animals. You probably know that the FDA has come out with a recommendation for industry for livestock producers to phase out certain uses of certain antibiotics. So
it's just overused, right?
There is a certain type of use, so for growth promotion and feed efficiency.
Oh, yeah.
So our research actually just became a lot more timely.
Hey, so do you know about this other expression, bacteria sins, where bacteria produce toxins against other bacteria?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's when people are talking about, you know, alternatives to antibiotics, you know, they generally will talk about organic acids, phytochemicals, bacteriophages, and bacteria sins as well.
So do the bacteria sins affect which phage succeeds, you know, in successive generations and so on? Or are the phages not affected by the toxins?
That I'm not sure. I couldn't answer that question fully. Mm-hmm. That'd be one to look into.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Well, go ahead. Just get that done. It's so complicated. How do you guys sort the stuff out? You go to sewage. You
That's
look for certain viruses.
What do you do? Like, just go in with a sample? You just take a little
eyedropper or a ladle?
Yeah, we call them first. And yeah, it's a lot like that. We call them first. And if you've never been to a wastewater treatment facility, I encourage you to go.
I've been to many of them. I almost went into engineering, wastewater engineering.
Long time. Yeah,
yeah, I was very fascinated with them. So
yeah, they're fascinating.
They
so
are,
the
are.
People
we all
are always,
count on them.
Yeah, and they're always really eager to work with us. So yeah, we basically go in with just little sampling cups and come out and then take them back to the lab. The process to get the phages is actually pretty simple. You're just spinning your sample down to get rid of a lot of the solids. Mm-hmm. And then...
Is that what we call them in the lab? Solids?
Solids, yeah.
Okay.
Well, we have other terms. But so you're spinning out all those solids and you're left with basically a liquid that has... It might have very few phages in it. It might have, I don't know, 10. And that's not going to show up on a plate. So you take your target bacteria, and that's where I was saying it's kind of like fishing, and then you grow those two overnight together, and now you've just amplified those phages because mm-hmm. they're parasites. They're obligate parasites. They're only going to replicate mm-hmm. if they're a special bacteria is there. And then it's a matter of purifying. And
wow.
Does help me out. What's the adjective obligate mean in this case? They're obliged to only go to...
Yeah, they're not going to exist without their host.
This is Science Friday from PRI. I'm Ira Flatow here with Bill Nye, the science guy, and then Paul Ebner, who is associate professor of animal sciences at Purdue. Does every bacteria have a phage? Every bacterium in the world have a phage that will attack it?
Well, we don't know all the bacteria in the whole world. But in general, most bacteria, and most of the bacteria that we're working with especially, because we're working with mostly foodborne pathogens, some other types of pathogens in agriculture, and we can find phages for all those. All
Does
those
somebody attack phages? Does somebody break phages apart?
Well, they not so much, but if the bacterium becomes resistant, then they're going to die out. So that's their...
How resistant can they become? Can they just can they be resistant to the phage itself that you have discovered, and then you have to find another variety of phage to kill it?
Yeah, that's possible. And then there's several different mechanisms. They might change their receptor so they're not recognized anymore, so basically they're invisible. They have mechanisms to maybe chew up the phage DNA.
Right.
The good thing about phages is they're so ubiquitous. And like I said, 10 of the 32 in the world. So it's, you know, with an antibiotic, it takes years and billions of dollars now to develop them. And if you want a new phage, I can probably get you one tomorrow.
All right.
Depending on what type of bacteria
we'll
you want.
Put an order in for...
we're
going to call mine phages of the moon. But
that's fine.
It's brilliant.
That's a good name.
but why aren't the drug companies then interested in this? Is it because they are not patentable? There's no money to be made off of this?
I think there's a lot of speculation about that, and while the live organism may not be patentable, and I should preface this by saying I'm not a patent lawyer, you know, the process or the purification, those are all patentable processes. And there are products available. I think some of the hurdles, they're not barriers, they're more hurdles, are the fact that there haven't been a lot of clinical trials with these different therapies.
I read about these people with these horrible infections, and they went to the country of Georgia.
Yep.
Where they have a whole phage farm or something.
Yeah, I've read those similar stories. They have it's a phage therapy center, and it's one of the leading centers for phage research, and there are anecdotes of people going there and getting different treatments. And
with
like
great
I said,
success. I mean, that was
yeah,
the thing.
Exactly.
Well, one would think that besides from having to go over to, because the old Soviet Union was where this all started, this research, and that people would go out of the country. If you have an infection and you can't have an antibiotic for it, you try anything, right?
Yeah. Oh, apparently you can stumble on the right phage to kill this bacterium that antibiotics cannot deal with.
I'm fascinated with the possibility that you can design one. You know,
you should
be able to, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to get calls and letters and emails.
The concern would be if you design one by accident, that's especially dangerous.
Well, that's the problem with everything in science, isn't it?
Well, but but your enemy, for example, if you make a deadly car, you can control that manufacturing process. If you make a deadly phage, there's a chance it could get away from you pretty quickly in a waste treatment plant.
Is that right, Paul?
That's a really big.
It's a science fiction thing. Yeah.
that's a really big jump in terms of evolution to find a phage that you know we
so
get
unusual.
Questions a lot.
Yeah, so extraordinary.
Yeah, we get questions a lot. Like you know, what if they mutate to where they can now recognize human cells?
And,
all right, we're going to leave it at there. We don't want to get too carried away into science fiction. Thank you, Dr. Ebner, for taking time to be with us today. Paul,
I appreciate it.
Paul Ebner, Associate Professor of Animal Sciences at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana.